From WHYY in Philadelphia, this is The Y. I'm Shai Ben-Yaakov.
And I'm Annette John Hall.
I don't know if this is right.
Okay, Annette, just to set the scene here for our listeners, we recorded this on a Friday.
Really snowy Friday.
Snowy Friday. And as you know, I went out this morning to visit the archive of the Philadelphia History Museum. It's this warehouse with 130,000 pieces from Philadelphia history.
Now, that's dope.
It is. Although I have to say, this place was really hard to find.
Nothing says the address on it that I'm looking for.
At one point, I actually just gave up and called my contact there, Paige Talbot, to come and bail me out.
Yeah, hi. Is this Paige Talbot? Hi, Paige. It's Shai Ben-Yaakov calling. Yeah, so I'm not totally sure I'm in the right place here.
So you found the place, right? Where was it?
Well, I can't tell you, unfortunately.
What do you mean you can't tell?
Yeah, I know. It sounds weird. And you know, Annette, I would tell you if I could, but I kind of promised that I wouldn't. And I'll tell you why I made that promise in a minute. First, I did eventually meet up with Paige Talbot.
Hi.
Oh, that was fast.
Yeah, it was just one too far. Hi, I'm Shai.
And Paige maintains this archive.
In this bulletin box is the last issue of the
Philadelphia Bulletin.
Yeah.
Wow.
So Paige took me around a little bit and showed me the collection.
Here's an old Reading Terminal Market sign, and there's an old Strawbridge and Clothier delivery van.
This is like a horse-drawn carriage.
It's right. Everything from really important stuff like
George Washington's desk, John Brown's musket that he used at Harper's Ferry. Here are Joe Frazier's boxing gloves, Jimmy Rollins' World Series.
That's his World Series outfit.
Yep.
To stuff that appeared to be just stuff.
Do you have any idea the significance of this piece of wood here?
I would have to look that up.
Okay.
That's all well and good, Shai, but why can't you tell me where this place is?
Because before we did that tour, Paige made me sign a non-disclosure agreement saying that I wouldn't tell anyone exactly where this warehouse is.
Why?
Well, because the curators of this archive don't want the public coming to see it. That's why it's in this random complex of warehouses that I got lost in. See, for a long time, many of the items here were displayed at the Philadelphia History Museum. But the museum closed last year, and now all the items are in this warehouse where Paige is just trying to sort them and maintain them, but it's not really in the business of displaying them. In fact, when I asked Paige whether there's a way for everybody else to see these things, she said,
"Not at the moment."
Drexel University has proposed a plan to acquire these items and lend them out for display.
But why would the city want to give its history over to a private institution?
Today on The Y, unpacking Philadelphia's history.
WHYY arts reporter Peter Crimmins has been on the story. So, Peter, how did this museum get started?
It started in 1938 by a city ordinance. It was actually mandated in a city ordinance that this gift from the Atwater Kent family, a building on 7th Street, would house a city history museum, and the collection would go into this building. So it's actually law.
And the museum was there for many decades, but it closed this past summer. What happened? Like, how the objects now get to this warehouse?
Money, basically. The short answer is money. At some point in the last, I'd say, 8 years, 10 years maybe, the board of the museum decided this is not sustainable. We can't fund this project of running a museum anymore. We have to find a partner who can take the brunt of it. And they tried many times to find a partner, and last summer they gave up. And they said, "We can't do this anymore. We're going to shut the doors, and we're going to send all the objects to this mysterious warehouse out on the sticks that you just visited."
Yeah.
And since they closed in the summer, they restarted talks with Drexel University to take it over. And those talks have been going well. In fact, they went well enough that they are announcing now that they have proposals, and they want to go forward with this deal with Drexel University to be their partner.
So what will Drexel be doing? Are they setting up a museum?
Well, no. We have to make a distinction between a museum, which is a building on 7th Street, the Atwater Kent building, and the collection. This is how museums operate. Every museum in the world basically has two functions: to collect and maintain things that they keep in an archive, an inventory, and to come up with clever ways to present those things and engage the public with them. And these are two very distinct operations that museums do. There's an archivist and there's a curator. And so what Drexel is proposing is only half of it. It's we're going to maintain this collection, which involves adding to the collection or culling things out of the collection, what's called deaccessioning, and making the collection available for loans. And they plan to do that through what they describe will be a very robust website with lots of photography, lots of information.
But you wouldn't actually be able to see these objects like in person?
Like you wouldn't be able to go to Drexel and see them.
You wouldn't go. Drexel has no plans to create a physical space where things will go on exhibition. What they plan to do is create partnerships around the city where the objects will go. They talked a lot about branch libraries or schools or community centers or whatever. Where the objects can live, even semi-permanently objects can live there. So you would be able to go to places to see the objects, but Drexel itself would not maintain that physical space.
How does Drexel and the city justify this plan, having a collection that nobody can go see?
So the city and Drexel University held a public hearing at the National Constitution Center last week.
Good evening, everyone. On behalf of the Board of Directors, I wish to thank you for coming to hear tonight about a proposed partnership between the museum, the City of Philadelphia, and Drexel University.
And the primary objective of their proposal was that this collection would stay whole, it wouldn't be broken up, and it would stay in the city. Worst case scenario, the city throws its hands up and says, we don't want this collection anymore, and it gets sold. It's sold to 1,000 different people at an auction, and it's gone forever. And City Managing Director Brian Abernathy said, we definitely don't want that to happen.
In this case, we believe a partnership with Drexel will, in fact, keep the collection intact and make our stories and history even more accessible to Philadelphia's next generation.
And so also at the meeting was a representative from Drexel University, Rosalind Reamer. She's a vice provost there.
As evidenced by the existential challenges facing history museums around the country and even abroad, a city history museum for Philadelphia doesn't appear at this moment in time to be sustainable.
One thing that Reamer said that I really took to heart, being someone who's half Swiss, is that she compared Drexel University to Switzerland as a neutral entity.
With no specific aspirations for these collections beyond their protection, proper management, and increased accessibility to the public.
Did the public get to comment at this meeting at all?
Oh,
what,
sure.
What was the mood among the public?
A lot of comments. The mood was people were upset. People were very respectful. No one shouted anything. No one, you know, threw their fist in the air. The room was kind of a who's who of local Philadelphia institutions and historians. One of the comments came from a guy around town named David Brownlee.
First of all, I want to thank Drexel for making this extraordinary public-spirited effort.
He's a University of Pennsylvania professor of architectural history. He's a fairly prominent guy in the area.
I must say, I don't think it's enough. I think that the strategic planning for the future of this collection must certainly ensure its preservation, must certainly ensure its cataloging and digital access. But I think that the strategic plan for this city's history has to include something that resembles a museum, a place that serves our people.
Plus, there was a lot of average, everyday people who have a passion with this sort of thing, and they really wanted their voices heard.
My name is Frank Hober. I live in South Philadelphia, and I'm very angry.
He remembers visiting the museum when he was 8 years old in 1950, constantly visited the museum since then, and he had some words to say.
The museum has never lived up to its potential because it has been chronically underfunded by successive city administrations. This has made it impossible to provide the kind of publicity and programming essential to bring in the audiences that a proper marketing program would attract.
So So, Peter, right now, this is just in the proposal stage. What's next?
Right. This is not a done deal. None of this is actually going to go forward until it goes forward. The city of Philadelphia and Drexel University ultimately will not have final say what this is. A judge in Orphans Court will have final say of what the best thing to do with this stuff is. And they might actually have to change the city ordinance. The original 1938 city ordinance that created the museum, that's on the books. That's probably going to have to be changed too.
Right, because it says that the city has to have a physical museum.
Yeah, right.
So, Peter, this isn't the first collection that Drexel has acquired. In 2011, it acquired the Academy of Natural Sciences, and now they're sniffing around other cultural institutions. What do you make of this?
Well, they're in a growth mode. Drexel started out as kind of a working class university,
yeah.
Someone who, if you wanted a good engineering job, a good business job.
I might interject here, my grandfather went there when it was a night school.
Hmm. Oh, there you go.
Wow.
And so Drexel is quite literally in the shadow of University of Pennsylvania. They're like across the street from University of Pennsylvania. University of Pennsylvania, which is a huge Ivy League school with massive resources. And Drexel wants to catch up. And to be a world-class university, you have to have programs and departments that are really well-developed in a whole range of subjects. This is their way to do that. They're being very proactive in growing humanities there.
All right, so that's why Drexel would want to do this. Why would the city want to do this deal?
Well, because the city is in a rough spot with the museum. They don't have any money. And a cynic might say that they're kicking the can down the road. The city's history museum has always been called the Philadelphia's attic because they have great stuff up there, and it's a little dusty.
Mm-hmm.
But the attic is usually the place where you put things that you don't know what to do with them. And that's been the case with this collection. When other institutions have a lot of stuff that they don't want to do with, they gave it to the City History Museum, to the Atwater.
So are you saying there's a lot of junk in the collection?
I can attest to the fact there's a lot of junk in the collection.
There is a multi-year program afoot to cull the junk out of the collection. There's some priceless, there's some brilliant things in there. There's some weird stuff in there. And it takes a long time to sort the wheat from the chaff, so to speak.
Yeah.
One thing they're saying that this partnership with Drexel could do is penetrate these objects deeper into neighborhoods. Remember that the Atwater Kent building on 7th Street could house maybe 400, maybe 500 objects. There are 130,000 objects in the collection. Some things have never seen the light of day. By making objects available through this website and making them available to organizations or spaces all over the city, you can get more things out in the public. So it's a way to spread it out farther, if it works.
Mm-hmm. If it works, yeah.
Thank you, Peter.
Thanks. Peter.
Good thing.
The Why is produced by me, Shai Ben-Yaakov, along with Annette John Hall and Alex Stern, with editorial direction from Katie Culinary. We had additional editing on this episode from Eugene San.
Subscribe to the podcast and leave us a review.
Reach out on Twitter at Shai Ben-Yaakov, at AnnetteJH, and at Alex Ray Stern.
We'll be back tomorrow.